In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media, and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop. We've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life, and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
Danny, yesterday,
yeah,
the losing streak did reach 7, but the Commanders played one of the more entertaining games in Week 13 in the NFL, taking the number one seed in the AFC as of this moment, the 10-2 Broncos, to overtime. They fought hard. They played a much more competitive, entertaining football game. I've got no venom. I liked everything about yesterday. There were some things we can get into that either they didn't do well or some coaching question marks or what have you. But the fact that they're now 6th in the NFL draft order, the fact that they gave the Broncos all they could handle, the fact that the offense with Terry McLaurin back looked way, 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 way better, and they did some really good things that, frankly, almost nobody else has been able to do against the number one defense in the league, the fact that the defense has made it 2 much stronger games in a row since Joe Witt lost his play-calling duties and Dan Quinn took over, things are looking up for the burgundy and gold as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, Terry McLaurin coming back was fun to watch. Just a reminder that, you know, when healthy, when he's right, he can be pretty effective. That was really cool for him. Even on a pitch count, you could still see he was a point of emphasis for this offense. So for me, watching this game, and I recognize I'm different than everybody else. I see something that doesn't make sense to me. I can't let it go. Other people can kind of let it get lost in the sauce and watch and enjoy. Of my checklist of things that I wanted, I got a lot of them. You just mentioned it. Had they won, would have been catastrophic. They'd pick a 10th or 11th, depends on your math. I'd have to go check the latest up-to-date Tankathon-type rankings in terms of opponent win percentage, and then it's an inverse. So you would have been 10th or 11th and going in the wrong direction. There's a couple bad teams made the mistake of winning this past Sunday. But I saw a group that did show some improvement, that fought, as you said. That was probably their best overall football game of the year against a quality opponent. I was pretty impressed with both sides of the ball. They moved the ball. They were better on the ground against Denver than they'd been in months, it felt like. Defensively, they were, again, not great, because I don't think they have great. I don't think they have that gear, but they were pretty good. The things that will frustrate me forever until they're different, the amount of Zach Ertz featuring, 13 targets for an oft-injured veteran on his final year of a deal. Benson, they can't get a target, played, I think, 10 snaps, 12 snaps, 17% of snaps. They can't feature Jalen Lane. Johnny Newton is sitting there behind a bunch of aging veterans. I'm not asking for crazy stuff, by the way. Just more playing time for second-round picks from last year. And maybe if an emphasis on that. Maybe it happens as the season goes. But there was a lot of boxes checked yesterday.
Yeah, I think a lot of the things you're asking for, you'll get more of in a few weeks as we get closer to the finish line. We're still about a third of the way left in this race. You know, it's not even December 1st as they're playing that game yesterday. And there are 6 games in a 17-game schedule left. They're not going to completely just flip a switch and punt and start playing all the kids, although I wouldn't mind that. It's just not how the reality of the league works, obviously. We'll spar for the next 5 weeks over whether or not it would have been catastrophic to win the game, because I just disagree with the idea that this team that has not won in 7 games now and in 8 or 9 weeks, whatever it is, technically, you know, that them winning a game, I'll save the word catastrophic for other things, frankly. I don't think it would have been that damaging, because whether they end up picking 5th or 8th or 11th, when you don't have a quarterback and the best thing to do is to trade down, I'm not sure if it's as huge a difference. I think it will be a difference, but it's not as huge a difference maybe as if they were looking for a quarterback and they needed to get as high as possible when they were taking Daniels or May or Williams when they were trying to get up to number two. But again, we've got 5 weeks to spar over that, and I'm sure we will go round and around. But specific to last night, the product was just so much better. This is what I have been wanting, really, for many, many weeks. When you play a good football team, look like you belong. And I think the fact that they're getting healthier now is the reason for what we got to see yesterday. Let's talk offense for a moment. Terry McLaurin got 14 targets and 7 catches for 96 yards and a touchdown. And that does not even account for the 30-yard post he ran, taken on contact at the goal line to what would have been Tyre win the game early on in OT when they would come back down the field and score again on a Terry McLaurin slant. So it could have easily been 8 for like 115.
Yeah, just to add a little color to that, he only played 51% of snaps on a pitch count. Understandable, by the way, because last time they just said, okay, go play a full game, he ended up hurt and missed another month and a half. So he basically received a target on 1/3 of the snaps he was in.
Which is pretty amazing.
Which is an astounding amount.
Now, I will say 50% of snaps last night is basically a normal game's worth because they ran 85 plays, which was the most that they have run since 2016 in the London game against the Bengals. Partially because of going to overtime, but really more accurately because they converted 8 third downs, because they went on really long drives. They did it, by the way, in the hardest way possible against the number one defense in the NFL. I said before the game, we were talking about this, it's impossible to go on these long 10, 11, 12, 13 play drives against the Broncos. If you have to do that, you will not have any chance. And they did it time and time and time again. It was a really, really incredible offensive plan by Cliff Kingsbury. That worked. I know Mariota threw one egregious interception that everybody will talk about, and you're allowed to. It's one of the 85 plays, and it was a very, very heavily weighted play. It was me after Thanksgiving dinner. Having said that, he low-key cooked otherwise. I mean, he throws for almost 300 yards. He runs for 55 yards against the number one defense in the league. But you can just see the difference, Danny, when you have Terry McLaurin out there. What it does for Zach Ertz, suddenly getting more man coverage and then running some of those zone beaters where there's not as much attention paid to him on some of those deep overs where he's crossing the field, getting hit for 21 and 19 yards on a couple of big-time plays. Great throws from Mariota, layered over top of defenders. The game changes a little bit. You get an opportunity to run Deebo Samuel, who is just kind of forgotten because when you line him out as a receiver and you run him down the field on a go ball, nobody really thinks you're targeting him. And they hit that 38-yarder down to the one-yard line because they're paying extra attention and bracketing Terry McLaurin, who's been featured throughout the second half. The offense changes. He really is truly a game-changer for them. And we've talked off and on about, like, who's the injury that killed them the most outside of Jaden Daniels? And I've mentioned Dietrich Wise, who they're, you know, couldn't set the edge after he was lost. People will bring up Austin Eckler. The answer is obviously Terry McLaurin. You just saw it last night. They're such a different offense, and it gives you some real hope when you get Daniels back, whether that's against the Vikings or the Giants. And more importantly, let's be honest, in 2026, if you have Terry out there and you have a true legitimate threat at wide receiver, this thing's going to look very, very different.
The best way I can explain it is, or the way I thought about it, is bad defenses became very good against Washington. Now, the overall numbers weren't that horrendous, but you could see it was a very pedestrian group. Every inch was fought for. It was nuclear fusion with chopsticks, right? Where they had to negotiate everything. Every window was tighter than all hell. They couldn't run the football against terrible defenses like Chicago or Dallas or any of the others because there was no threat. There was a threat yesterday. There was absolutely a threat, even with the great Patrick Surtain back there. That kid, by the way, is unbelievably good.
Best
My God, what a
baller. League.
What a baller he is.
Probably not that close right now. That's cornerback one.
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe to say. And if there's someone else great, good for him too. That guy's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But you could see the difference. I think you said it very well. The even if you weren't going over the top, and they did a couple different times, maybe they fell in love with it to a degree because I think they're running it so well. Maybe there was more things they could have done that weren't taking shots, but they were pretty determined. They had a plan and they stuck to it. I was so impressed with that competitiveness and the ability to rally after the bye week. I know they're pros and they're supposed to be able to do that, but human nature, man. A really good team's coming to town. Your season's lost. You're terrible. Everybody knows you're terrible, and everyone's making fun of you or the punchline. They stayed in that game and kept counterpunching, and there was no rollover in them, which you could easily see happening when a first-place team from the AFC comes to town with that vice-like defense. So it was impressive.
Yeah. I just, it warmed the heart to see them play a good team well. When you played the Denvers a month ago, it was 44-22. Now, it should also be acknowledged, Bo Nix is somewhat limited, watching him in person for the first time yesterday. And I think the Denver offense is a keep-you-in-the-game offense. This is how they've played every single game all year long. They are the first team in the history of the league, by the way, to trail in all 12 of their first 12 games and to have a record where they've won at least 10 times. And they constantly do this in the fourth quarter, where they steal a game from the Giants, where they beat the Colts at the horn, where they beat the Chiefs at the horn. Now they beat Washington in overtime. This is what they do. This is their game. And this is a league with tiny margins where you either make the winning play or you don't. And the team that always does, Denver, is 10-2. And the team that just hasn't, in games like Chicago and Miami and this one, Washington, is 3-9. And instead of being 6-6 and a wild card hopeful, your season is now completely over. But credit the Broncos. They always make the winning plays. I think they are well coached. Nick shows up in the big moments when he has to. He was excellent on that five-play drive in overtime where they go right down the field for 76 yards. They finally get their first huge explosive of the game where they get Evan Engram working on Bobby Wagner. He does a little whip route, leaves Wagner in his dust, and then runs for 41 yards. But I thought we got our answer to, was this defensive improvement just about Miami, or is there something to this? There's clearly something to this.
There's something to it.
I wouldn't want to be Joe Witt right now because it looks so much better and so much different without him calling the plays. I'm not saying everything's fixed. It's not going to be fixed. They have real problems on defense that you cannot fix until the offseason. They have personnel issues. You don't have linebackers that can run with tight ends. In this league, that's a death sentence. You don't have speed in the second level of your defense. In this league, that is going to make you not very good on that side of the ball. They can't really set edges, something the Broncos, with their run game and their injury to J.K. Dobbins, weren't going to take much advantage of yesterday. Their strengths on defense are few and far between. But now you're just a professional outfit that's not going to be great on defense. Which is not a crime, by the way.
Right.
There's a lot of those defenses out there.
If they had this whole year where they were middle of the pack on defense, it's a very different season.
100%.
Even with all the injuries and all the different things on offense that didn't go right.
If you play the game you played yesterday against the Vikings and Max Brosmer or J.J. McCarthy, they score in the teens and you win the game. If you play the game they played either against Miami or Denver yesterday against the Giants in a couple weeks, you probably turn Jackson Dart over a couple times. The Giants might have 20 points. And you win that football game. Like, that's the difference between yesterday and what became the norm when they were the first team in 23 years to lose by 20 or more points for a month straight.
Yeah, you can go back and look at it. If you played that way against the Falcons, I think you probably win that game. By the way, the Falcons, good heavens. But you go back and look at the Dallas game. If you played that way against Dallas, that's a good offense with good pieces, right? But maybe you're in that game. You got a chance to win it. I don't think you beat Seattle that day. I don't think you beat Detroit that day the way that they were playing. Kansas City, probably the same deal. You lose a one-score game on the road to a team with Savvy and Moxie, et cetera. But, again, it's a different season. We're talking about a far more competitive product instead of a group that got outscored by almost 100 points over a handful of weeks. You're talking about just a different team, different year. And this is just one of those, bummer, we were that close. Just a couple of breaks didn't go our way. Instead of this was a meltdown. This was the worst-case scenario. Which scenario, Danny? All of them. Every single thing that could have gone wrong did, and not just kind of wrong. It went as wrong as ever been.
Ertz went off 10 for 106 on 13 targets. He was awesome. He had three plays, though, where, and this is the most Zach Ertz thing ever, where your athleticism being limited and some of the I guess we just say limitations for him.
Yep.
Show up. We're deep down the field. Now, ball hung in the air a little too long, and then Alex Singleton made an amazing play to punch the ball out. What would have been a huge play to set up a field goal in the fourth quarter. By the way, that's Alex Singleton's story. He's an all-timer. This linebacker for the Broncos. This is the same guy, by the way, that played an entire game with a torn ACL last year. 23 days from having a mass removed and testicular cancer. He was on the field flying around last night and made maybe the play of the game defensively for the Broncos against Ertz. Then he has the play back in the end zone where he can't make the catch. He had it didn't end up mattering, but he had a play where he fell just short of the sticks again. So, like, those are those things that people that don't like the Ertz experience, which is kind of a them problem, they're going to focus on those three plays. Where I come from, when you have 10 catches for 106 yards as a tight end in the NFL, and the offense kind of goes through you, and your offense scores 26 to almost knock off one of the best defenses in the league, I'm going to tip my cap to you. But he goes for 100. McLaurin goes for 96. Debo, because of the 38-yard play, goes for 64. I like that they got Colson Yankoff involved. He's an athletic guy at the tight end position. That 14-yard catch he made was a pretty nice play. The one thing I'll say about Ertz that I didn't get is they designed this tight end screen to him that was kind of DOA, pretty obviously. That's just not a play that you should run for Ertz. That's where, if you're running a tight end screen there, just go ahead and put Ben Sinnott out there or give that to Yankoff with his speed. It's kind of what he did at UCLA. This is a guy that lined up at running back some for the Bruins in college. So I didn't really get that usage. But they ran a play from on a first and 10 to start a drive from under center with 13 personnel where they went play action, roll out, and hit Terry McLaurin for a 16-yard explosive. Be still, my beating heart.
You must have been so excited.
I mean, I just about ripped my shirt off in the press box.
There were 16 targets to tight ends, and Ben Sinnott didn't get one. I can't. Other people can, and they can move on, and they'll be able to talk about it. Or not care, and just talk about everything else. I just can't get over it.
2-3 weeks from now, I'll join you in anger. It's just not the time of the season where I'm going to go crazy about that. I don't like it. But there's a difference between endorsing it, which I'm not doing, or liking it and being angry
and my thing,
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, not being able to let it go.
Like, you have an axe to grind, and you, like you've now got this thing that you're obsessing over. I'm just not going to join you there. But in 3 weeks, we'll be in the same place anyway if Ben Sinnott is still not involved.
I think that's fair. Everyone's welcome to join me, or not, or yell at me, whatever it is. Again, I'm not saying he needs 13 targets. One would be nice. Let's go crazy and get two. The little tight end screen thing you mentioned, or that rollout with 13 personnel couldn't go to him. Would have been nice. I'd love to see the second round pick play. I know that's novel and crazy for a team that's 3-9, but I digress. But overall,
speaking of second round picks, really quickly,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to make like this grandiose comment on this because I have not gone back and watched all 22 on this. But I can't. There were at least two or three times where I noticed Johnny Newton just getting blown off the ball in the run game last night. Now, a couple of them happened in a drive where he ended up having a really nice pressure as well. But we might be at a point with him where it's kind of helping in the passing game or not helping that much because he's an undersized defensive tackle.
Yep.
There's clearly a reason why they don't play him that much. So this is something to dive in on. But he was the 36th pick in the draft. So I think your point is perfectly reasonable when you're saying, okay, guys, we're 3-9 here. There's five games to go. Johnny Newton, Ben Sinnott. There's other guys we could name.
Sure.
Like Brandon Coleman would be one of them.
Yeah, a little bit more Jordan McGee. Turn that fader up. Again, they don't have
flashed again last night.
Yeah, they don't have a ton of young pieces. So I'm not talking about, like, you know, going full, hey, Wizards, call up the G League. They don't have that. There simply aren't players that I'm really that interested in. There's a handful, and those guys don't get opportunities.
Speaking of Brandon Coleman, though, I do want to mention, I thought the O-line was awesome last night.
For sure.
In pass protection. Yeah. This is the group that has close to 20 more sacks than any other team in the NFL coming in, and you would not have known it. They had one in the game. Some of it is Mariota's decisiveness, and I do give him credit for this as a veteran quarterback. I think generally he's pretty good at setting protections. The ball comes out pretty fast, and he deserves to be respected for that. But if you look at some of the next-gen stats numbers, and I posted this at Grant H. Paulson on Twitter if you want to go find it, the Broncos got pressure 17% of the time, which was their lowest pressure rate since Week 3, 2023, in that game where they gave up 70 points to the Miami Dolphins. And then if you look at some of the individual matchups, Laremy Tunsil on one of the best pass rushers in the league, Nick Benito. Now, I think he was wearing a cask, and he complained about it after the game affecting him. But still, two pressures on 28 matchups, so Tunsil dominated him. Jonathan Cooper did not get a single pressure in 26 matchups against Josh Connerly, who, despite the hold that took away the McLaurin touchdown, which as a lineman, heavy lies the crown here, this is what happens, everyone will kill you for.
Mm.
But he was really, really good in pass pro. And then Sam Cosmi, one pressure on 55 pass blocks against the interior. That's a really, really good interior.
Yeah, they're good at everything.
So you're starting to see this group ascend, come together. This is the planned five. They got to find a way to keep these guys intact going into next season because it could be a real strength for them.
So to me, one part plan, which was we know when our shots are going to be there, and we, you know, those are the ones you need to block up, right, to give the receiver time to make a move, etc. The other part is enough of the quick game that, and it was accessible quick stuff, because it's one thing just to say, ah, throw it quickly. Well, do you have somewhere to go? Does the read take you there? Does the play design leave something open almost automatically? It did a lot. But to me, it was the way they ran the ball. I did not expect that at all. I did not expect them to be able to run it as effectively, especially on the interior. I mean, they were shoving it on Denver for a decent amount. Again, it wasn't one of those Ravens where, you know, Derrick Henry has 160, some guy you never heard of has 55.
Ahead of the chains, man.
But it was ahead of the chain stuff. It was 4.5, 5.5 yards on first down consistently, and they were really, really good in that regard. Just nothing fancy either. It wasn't like super well-designed, great comeback, cutback counter, this, that, and the other. This was, to me, a lot of power football, and they ran it really, really well in that game.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Find new customers on a platform that's here to stay. With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
It's Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt joining us on Grant and Danny. Bill, good to talk to you again, man. How are you?
What's going on? I'm doing good. How you doing?
Good, buddy.
Doing very well.
How y'all doing?
I got to say, even though it was a loss in overtime, that was a super entertaining, fun game on Sunday night. What was it like to play in that one, a one-point overtime game, taking on one of the best teams in the NFL?
It was definitely exciting. You like games like that, especially when it's that competitive. And, I mean, you just want to capitalize and win it. So definitely hurt not to come out on top. But I mean, that's what you like, those competitive games, and just seeing the fight in your team. Like, you just needed to come out on top.
Their defense is really, really good, but you guys were able to move the football, score some points, do what not a lot of teams have done to them this year. How were you guys able to find so much success on the ground, Bill?
Just Not trying to make nothing up, basically. Just sticking to our routine and like just execute. I feel like that was the main thing that helped the run game. And I mean, guys was just on point with what we needed to do.
Yeah, 142 rushing yards in the game. When you go Mariota's 55, Rodriguez had 41, McNichols had 30. You added 20 on your four carries, and you had a really nice 12-yard run that looked like earlier this season when you were going at peak, where you bounce it back to the right, you find some space, and get downhill. Did that feel like, you know, how you were going when you were grooving early in the year? That had to feel good.
Yeah, it definitely did. For me to go out there and like just create an explosive play, that definitely felt good for sure.
That's such a good pass rushing group over there in Denver. They came in leading the league in sacks. What did you guys have to do as running backs just to make sure that they didn't get to Marcus?
They have so many different looks, so we just had to make sure we know like who was who and like who was our guy, and like just basically a lot of film study, because they can disguise things so well. So it was basically just locking in more on film and understanding what they like to do on defense and who they like to bring.
Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt with us on Grant and Danny. To that point along those lines, the Vikings are one of the most blitz-happy teams in the NFL. Brian Flores is dialing up blitzes from the parking lot. He gets off the bus. I mean, they blitz more than anybody. What kind of film study is this for you, just to be in that backfield, to know where things are coming from? They're going to do exotic stuff you haven't seen. Like, how do you prepare for a team that blitzes as much as the Vikings and Flores?
I would say just knowing who my ID is, who my guy is, and just knowing my assignment on this play right here, and basically just staying true to my read, even though they may give us these different looks and try to disguise it as something else. But it's basically just making sure you just stay disciplined until you're a read, and like just gotta trust everybody to do their job. Which you and the O-line just have to be on the same page.
In terms of being on the same page, is it hard to have different quarterbacks kind of come in and out? I know Marcus has played a bunch, and hoping Jaden plays with us this weekend or coming up soon. Do you have to prepare differently at all for different cadences or different tendencies with each guy? Is it a challenge to kind of have different quarterbacks?
I wouldn't say it's a challenge for me. I think both of the guys running the system the same, so it's really not a difference, like, about who's at quarterback. So I feel like we all get the calls the same. So it's really not a huge difference. You just gotta know your assignment, and like just communicating the calls with the O-lines and the quarterback, basically, so we can understand what protection we in.
Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt of the Commanders. They're 3-9 going to Minnesota, trying to end a 7-game skid. Kind enough to join us here on GND. Give us a couple of minutes on the Fan. Bill, as far as Terry McLaurin's game goes, it just felt like a good reminder of what he's capable of. You know, all year long we've talked about the injuries, and dating back to the summer, the holdout was such a big story. But that was a grown man performance. I mean, was that a reminder for you guys, too, of just how much he can impact things and how different things are when he's out there?
It was great to have him out there. But we definitely know what type of player he is already. So it was good just to see him just back on the field with us. It was definitely exciting to see him make the catches that he had, and like just him even being physical after the catch, and like just his presence made things fun out there for sure.
Speaking of physical, Ja'Cory, you're playing a lot of games, man. This is a long NFL season. It's a grind. I know, you know, through no fault of your own, you didn't get to play as many games in college last year, certainly. How's your body holding up? How are you feeling mentally? Where are you?
I feel like everything's going smooth.
Good.
Body's feeling great. Just making sure I can take care of it week in and week out. So body's feeling good, and like mentally wise, I mean, it's a long season, but you know, you just gotta stay focused and take it one day at a time, and like not look too far ahead, and just attack every day the same. So I mean, I feel like I'm handling it pretty smooth. I don't think it's it's nothing too much that I can't carry.
Bill, we'll let you out on this one, but I just wanted to get your thoughts. I hadn't talked to any players about this since game night. The two-point conversion to try to go for the win instead of tying it and extending overtime there. Danny and I were both cool with it. I loved it. I thought it was the only decision, but I'd be curious to hear from you. Like, did you guys know the whole time if you got down there you were going to go for two and go for the win? And what was your reaction to that?
Man, I loved it. I mean, I really didn't know, but whatever his decision was, we was ready to go out there and execute the play. So, I mean, it was whatever he called, we was going to be fine with it. But we was okay with going with two, for sure.
Hey, let me sneak in one more, because Hard Knocks is tonight on HBO, and I'm so excited. The Redskins, Commanders, football team, whatever they've been called, has never been on this show, and I've wanted this. So many of us have wanted this for years. Have you noticed the cameras? Like, have they sat down and done interviews with you? Just how involved have they been, or intrusive or otherwise, has that process been? And are you excited to see what it becomes here on HBO for Hard Knocks?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see the cameras around, and like it's cool just to like. I mean, you grew up watching the Hard Knocks, and now they're here. But yeah, we definitely noticed the cameras around, and like I haven't been on one yet. I haven't sat down and done an interview with them yet, but it's definitely different just having like a film crew around and like cameras in the meeting rooms and stuff like that.
You gonna watch yourself tonight?
Oh yeah, for sure.
I would too, buddy.
What time do it come on?
9 o'clock tonight on HBO.
Okay. I'll definitely have to check it out.
If you don't have HBO Max, text me. I'll give you my login.
All right, I got you.
Jay, if it asks you, we live in the same family. It's me, you, and cousin.
I bet.
All right, if you want, you can add cousin's little decal right there. It could be a little puppy right on my HBO Max account.
No, I got you. Appreciate that.
All right, you just got to give me your Hulu or something like that.
No, we can definitely spot something out.
I'm just messing with you. All right, Bill, be good,
man.
I know. good catching up.
No.
All right, enjoy.
See you, buddy.
There's Ja'Cory Cross Demerit. It's Bill season.
Bill season.
Grant and Danny every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Hard Knocks tonight, 9 p.m.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Own a small biz and need a reliable way to reach new customers? Try TikTok for Business.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today with TikTok for Business. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTokAds.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds low after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
The Hall of Fame committee and voting is ongoing, and the finalists are being whittled down little by little until we'll have a class announced right at the end of this football season. And so you have the 2026 Hall of Fame class getting smaller and smaller as we get closer to the finish line here. And according to Don Van Natta Jr. today of ESPN, Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick, the co-architects of the NFL dynasty in New England with the Patriots, are finalists for this 2026 class of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The Hall announced this morning that Kraft, who has owned the six-time Super Bowl champion Patriots since 94, was the lone finalist in the contributor category. Marks the first time Kraft, who's 84 years old, is going to be a finalist for the Hall after 14 years of campaigning on his behalf. Belichick, who's an eight-time Super Bowl winning coach. Eight times, by the way.
Yeah.
Damn. Six as head coach of the Patriots. Two as a defensive coordinator of the Giants. Finalist in the coaching category. First year of eligibility for him. And then sources on the class who were talking to Van Natta got into some of the other details behind the scenes. But here's what Commanders fans will care about. It sounds as though the wait continues for a couple of our own. Of course, Brian Mitchell, who works with us here at 106.7 The Fan, who's an immensely deserving Hall of Fame candidate. There's never been a more successful return man, and he's number two all-time in yards behind only Jerry Rice. Still no Hall of Fame bid. And Joe Jacoby, who has been worthy of the Hall since the day he stopped playing, continues now to play the waiting game, despite being the most recognizable and perhaps important member of the most recognizable and important offensive line in the history of the league. Both of those are ridiculous. Because we're biased when it comes to B-Mitch, we can come back to that one. But how is Joe Jacoby not in the Hall of Fame? This has never made any sense to me. And I don't do the officials tried to make Washington lose thing. Similarly, I've always kind of found this idea that they hold Hall of Fame bids against the Redskins for the name or because of Dan Snyder or whatever else. Kind of turned my eyes, rolled them on that. But as much as I like to turn my nose up on those types of things, give me a good reason why this team is so underrepresented. The era of dominance of this team, that offensive line, whether it's B-Mitch or Jacoby or others, how is it possible? I mean, Art Monk had to wait forever to get into the Hall of Fame. It seems like that's always the case for Washington, and it's not a tiny Hall of Fame. There's like six, seven guys that get in every single year.
It is. All of those conspiracy theories to me are right until proven otherwise. And here's what I mean. This era, this group, never gets the respect it deserves. I think there are multiple reasons for it. People that were talking about the name then, and even in the 90s, I don't think that's a thing. Here's what I do think is a thing. Because it wasn't one coach, one quarterback, consecutive years, right, where they're back-to-back champs or this or that, they had to take turns with San Francisco, with Chicago, with the Giants, other teams of the 80s. The second most successful team of the 80s goes to four Super Bowls, wins three of them. It wasn't as sexy as some of the others. And so it never got the appreciation. You had to have analytics nerds come by 30 years later and going, have you all noticed that this 91 team is maybe the greatest team of all time? Anybody ever talk about that? We know. We watched them take everybody's ass to the woodshed. And they came back with welts. They were unbelievable. A buzzsaw mixed with a juggernaut with momentum. Everybody can get some. They were unbelievable, but it never gets mentioned until decades later where people kind of went, look at this, look at the EPA per play, look at the DVOA, look at this defense. Oh my God, these guys were incredible. And it took forever for people to have any kind of appreciation. It took lobbying for literally decades of people like Peter King, who was the most influential guy at the table, to finally make him appreciate, hey, Art Monk was really good. You know, the guy that retired with more receptions than literally anybody that ever played football. That guy should probably go to Canton. And it took forever for it to happen. This group never gets the appreciation it deserves. I don't think it's because of the name Redskins, but I do think it's because...
Well, it shouldn't be now, by the way.
Right, but for whatever reason, that...
If that's your theory, you could say, well, they played for the Redskins. Your logo at the time, that was the emblem, so that would go on the bus or whatever. But I don't buy that.
Yeah, like sometimes it applied, but it didn't apply for Darrell Green. It didn't apply for Riggins.
Exactly.
I've never bought that. But I do buy that the people that cover this league in this New York-centric marketplace or whatever. I mean, if you played for the Giants for an hour and a half and made 10 tackles, Peter King's like, I think you should be in the Hall of Fame. I had a great Starbucks this morning. Like, we read it for years. And finally, the world's opening up. And still, those guys, Brian Mitchell most specifically, but to me, the greatest case is Joe Jacoby. Member of the all-80s decade team. Not some, he was supporting us. He was our blood and guts, heart and soul. In the 80s, when the Niners kicked everyone's ass, and so did Washington, the all-decade left tackle. Right there, that dude. It's not just some matter of like a couple people's opinion here locally. Everybody gets it. And for some reason, he can't get in.
He also was on all three Super Bowl championships.
Yeah.
So there's three rings here that he's a big part of, right? How many guys who are on an all-decade team were multi-time first-team All-Pros and four-time Pro Bowlers that are not in the Hall of Fame? I would love to see if there's another one. I'll bet you at the tackle position, there isn't. Not a single guy that was all-decade with four Pro Bowls, two first-team All-Pros, and certainly not a guy with the resume where you're the starting tackle for three Super Bowl championship teams. No chance does that resume exist anywhere else.
So Roger Craig would probably be the closest, and he was one of the three finalists this year.
He's one of the finalists.
He's finally getting his just desserts because he changed football. People don't remember this. Like, he went 1,000 and 1,000 as a running back. That's receiving and rushing in the same year. Like, the overall numbers weren't maybe as gaudy as some other guys, but as part of this offense that changed the way offense was played in the league, and by the way, Gibbs had a hand in that too, not the West Coast system, but in terms of changing football. But that was the only other guy that kind of couldn't get his just desserts. He's getting them now, rightfully so.
Just desserts? I've never heard that phrase before. Is that a thing?
Yeah, that's usually come like interchangeable with comeuppance,
okay,
which is usually more negative skewed. But like he's getting his flowers.
Gotcha.
His Richmond.
I assumed that's what it meant. I've just never heard that phrase in my life. Roger Craig is 1 year younger than Joe Jacoby. They're 65 and 66, and they played a similar era. He does not satisfy the requirement that I laid out, though, in any way. He is not a two-time first-team All-Pro. He's a one-time first-team All-Pro. He did not have the resume of Joe Jacoby.
No.
He is a three-time Super Bowl champion and a four-time Pro Bowler. So, as you said, there's some things that are close. But, like, it's hard with O-linemen because there's no counting stats. But assuming Jacoby is the dominant figure that everybody has said that he was and that players who went against him say that he was, he's got a better resume. I mean, Roger Craig was a... It was a different era, so I always say that. But he was a three-time 1,000-yard back in a 11-year career. That's what he was. And if you're looking for 900-yard seasons, there are still three of them. In fact, in his career, there were 5 years, including the final four, where he rushed for under 600 yards in a season. So about half of his career is a running back. Now, again, I understand we right. could talk about different eras,
but
my point is, he had one superstar year where he led the league in yards from scrimmage. He was the first team All-Pro, third in the MVP vote, was the offensive player of the year. He was Christian McCaffrey for a season. He's now a finalist. He's now gone further than Joe Jacoby, one of the best tackles to ever live, on three Super Bowl teams, who made multiple years over the best tackle in the league, and he's never gotten as far. It is crazy to me. Let's go to Mark in Rockville wants to hop in. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hey, guys. How are you doing this afternoon?
Hey, bud.
I just have a question. I assume there's absolute criteria and then relative criteria, meaning who in this current cohort they're considering. But I have a stupid question. Why doesn't somebody just ask why Joe is not being, I don't know if he's not being considered or why he's not getting in?
Was being considered. He's been a semifinalist.
Yeah, he's been considered for a long time. I'm sure the questions come up. So here's the question on the process, I guess, to the caller's point here, to Mark's point. So what happens next is on January 13th, the vote takes place. And I think it's 50 people that are going to vote on this. How do we get from the big list to here? Is that still a committee or a panel, or is that the Hall of Fame itself? In other words, Jacoby can't crack through this wall. Is that based on the committee of voters and media members, or is that the Hall of Fame itself that presents the list of 50 finalists that he's never gotten on to these voters to vote on January 13th? Does my question make sense?
It kind of does. I also don't know the answer specifically about the process. I always know that, hey, he's a semifinalist. I don't know who made him, Matt. I don't know what group that, now that it's a veterans committee as opposed to the regular group. Again, one of my least favorite non-criminal division class of people are Hall of Fame voters in various sports. I find them so loathsome and irritating.
Statement.
It is very large. I find them so irritating, especially baseball. That's my number one. But
those are some of your favorite writers and media members that you're talking about.
When it comes to that, I find them so obnoxious, and I cannot believe that they take the courses of actions that they take. Some don't do it. Many do, and I find it ridiculous.
So here's the answer I'm getting. The Pro Football Hall of Fame Selection Committee votes for players to be inducted. This committee consists of 50 media representatives, which is what I was talking about. One from each pro football city. Forever for us, that was David Elfin here in D.C., with two each from New York and Los Angeles, 17 at-large selectors, and one representative from the Pro Football Writers of America. The committee meets annually to elect new members, with a candidate needing at least 80% of the vote to be enshrined. So I got all that. What I want to know is, how do we get to the finalists? I'm going to get answers on that for people, and I'll mention that when we return here. Cliff Kingsbury met with the media. Before I get to the comment he made and what we wanted to talk about, has Cliff had a better year than we've given him credit for, do you think? We were beating up on him pretty good 2-3 weeks ago. The offense has started to turn it around a little bit as they've gotten healthier. And you take inventory now and you kind of take a step back, look from 10,000 feet, and you say, how sure are we that he hasn't gotten a lot of juice out of an orange that didn't have much? I mean, if really this was all about injuries, and you look at where they're ranked now, it's not like he had a terrible season as a coordinator. I've been frustrated with some things. My problem right now with their offense is that Cliff just refuses to adapt to some of the things around the league that are very successful. I think they need to be under center more. I think they need to go 12 and 13 personnel, play action, roll in the pocket, boots more. He doesn't really have any interest in doing that, and so this is just what it's going to be. You're going to line up and gun. You're going to occasionally be in pistol. You're going to run spread and do the horizontal raid. But if you look at some of the numbers, they're number two in the red zone with all the weapons that they haven't had at times this year. In terms of overall rankings, they're 11 in EPA per play. They're 12 in yards per play. They're 13 in third downs. They're 10th in fourth downs. I think a lot of coordinators in this league would have had worse numbers with the cast that they've been operating with and a backup quarterback starting for half of the season than Kingsbury's had.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Just given what we saw last year and how good it was, this is certainly a big step back from that, and you went through the reasons why. Yards per play, they actually come off pretty well. They're tied for 12th with a handful of teams that are right in that bucket, which is
to me, among non like deep dive analytics, that's the best stat. You line up, how many yards do you get on any given play?
Yeah, and they're pretty middle of the pack in that regard. And given, as you said, no Terry McLaurin for 80% of their games, no Austin Eckler for most of it, very little weaponry at times, backup quarterback, everybody kind of being on to you. No deep threat of any sort. Yeah, that's actually not too bad. It's the points that I think really kind of screw them. Like they haven't scored, even though they've moved the ball decently well, even without, again, with all the usual caveats. If you were middle of the pack in all those numbers, if you were say 17th in points, I'd go, yeah, that makes sense. That's kind of a corollary. I think they're 24th in points scored
as an
offense.
Phenomenal in the red zone though.
Once they get there, yeah.
So that tells you a couple things. I think they've had more long drives to go on because of their defense.
Yep. No, and no turnovers, no short fields ever.
Never short fields.
Yep.
Because you don't get any takeaways, and when you do, it's almost never in plus territory. But to the other side of that token, I guess, their return game is great. Kick returns, specifically punt returns to a lesser extent, but I mean, they're one of the best kick return units in the NFL and one of the best starting field position units in that regard in the league. Almost every single week, you know, they've got a drive starting past the 40-yard line or something like that. So maybe you give some, you lose some there. But I would say overall, while I have my annoyances and things that I wish Cliff did a little bit differently, and when it's going well, they don't matter. And when it's not, you get a little more frustrated. It's like a marriage. It's like when you're having one of those weeks where you're just in a bad mood, all of a sudden, the thing that, you know, your husband not doing the dishes maybe bothers you a little more. You know what I'm saying? Yep. And right now I'm going, come on, man. We can't ever get under center. We can't run any plays like all the good offenses do in the league. But if you just told me no Terry McLaurin almost all season, no Noah Brown almost all season,
you're going to suffer, yeah.
Debo's going to be banged up for the better part of a month where he's not quite himself. No Austin Ekeler as your outlet. Really, the only area that's going to be unimpeded by injury in any way on the depth chart is the offensive line. There's going to be some flux there at left guard anyway. And you're going to be just outside of the top 10 in offense with 5 weeks to go when Jaden Daniels played half of the season. I would have signed up for that sight unseen. I wouldn't have said, no, I'll do with, let me see what's behind the other door. That is an easy sign up for that spot.
I would say so. I mean, again, given all the dramatics around, given everything that's gone as bad as it possibly could have, you're right. On a binary, I would have signed up for that. Where, hey, am I middle of the pack on offense for the most part? I'd say yes, and let's see how how will I stay afloat. Again, the thing we talk about a lot is if their defense was just regular, not good. Not even talking about good. Not even mediocre. Not even average. If it was regular, not good, in the low 20s with an occasional turnover, they probably win two more games at some point,
at least.
Or yeah, they're not getting blown out by 25 each and every week, right? For a month plus.
Complimentary football is not a thing that you get to benefit from if you're Cliff Kingsbury either, to that point.
No.
You know, every coordinator in the league knows, on both sides of the ball, I'm not just talking offense here, but you are made better by the guy in the building coaching the other side of the ball, or you're made worse by that person. Sometimes I think that their defense has it harder because of their tempo, because Cliff Kingsbury's not in the huddle. By the way, their percentage of non-huddle plays is so much higher than anybody else's. It looks like it belongs on a Saturday. And I kind of like no huddle, but they do it even to the extreme more than I would. But their tempo can put a team in a bind. I remember one time talking to Kyle Shanahan about this years ago when he was the OC here. And I brought him some numbers, and I'm like, hey, help me with this. And I showed him what Washington's offense was doing with tempo as opposed to not with tempo. And I'm like, here's what you guys are doing with tempo. It was one of the highest rated everything in the league.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, here's what you're doing when you're not using tempo. It was not good. And I said, but you're doing it at this rate. And it was middle of the pack at best. I don't remember all the specifics. And I remember him saying to me, like, yeah, I love it. Like, I want to do more of it. But right now, we don't have a defense that can survive if we're out there going three and out potentially and giving the ball right back to an offense.
And our whole drive takes literally 1 minute. We can't do that.
And I just remember thinking, okay, so they know they could be better on offense if they did it this way,
mm-hmm.
but they think that overall the product for the team might suffer from that. And it does feel like Washington, at least from a play calling, tempo, no huddle standpoint, is going, everything else be damned, let's turn up the faders as best we can on what's best for the offense sometimes. And I think that makes it harder on a bad defense.
I think that's true. But my only counter to the counter, and it's a good point, is it's not as if they're always snapping it with 25 seconds left on the play clock, right? They can go no huddle, but how many times does the referee walk up to the line of scrimmage and go, I'm the letter T, everyone has to wait, and they're still snapping it fairly low. They're just not huddling in between.
I'd have to look this up. The last time I looked, they ran the fastest time between plays in the league.
For the most part, they do.
By a bunch.
And there's no question about that. Yeah. They're if they're not up there, the third or fifth. I mean, the point is they go fast. But it's not every, like, their three and outs usually don't take that. Like, there were years at Buffalo, for example, when they were so good out of the K-gun with Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas and Andre Reed and company. They were like, we're awesome in the two-minute drill. We're incredible. We got a maestro here. We got weapons galore. We're so good when we play hurry up. Let's just play hurry up all the time. And the rare occasion it would go bad, their three and outs would be, they'd be done in 45 seconds. And the defense, you know, Bruce Smith and Daryl Talley and all the guys would come right back on the field. That's, you know, I don't think that happens that often with this offense is kind of my point.
They're 12th, just outside of the top 10 in percentage of drives, by the way, that are three and outs. You'd like to be lower there if you're going to operate mm-hmm. with the tempo they do
yeah.
to that point in terms of helping the defense. But look, we wanted to get into Laramie Tunsil. We got a lot of show in front of us and some runway to do that. So we will get into what Cliff Kingsbury said about the big left tackle and the fact that he's going to break the bank probably this offseason or next because he's one of the better pass protectors in football. It's an interesting comment from Kingsbury for a guy who might need an extension from Washington this offseason. But I actually want to double-click on Kingsbury because it's been a while since we have taken the temperature of our audience on him. And it did seem like his approval rating was dropping, like everybody in the building, over the last several weeks. As you lose, that happens. And as your side of the ball, in his case, gets less effective, that happens. But I do think, maybe you can call it reactionary or recency or whatever after they had a good game against the Broncos. I just think if you look at the totality now of 12 football games, even as we're sitting here and they've lost 7 in a row and 8 of 9, I do feel like he has actually done a good job with the hand he's been dealt this year. And I wonder if people agree with that first. 800-636-1067. And just where are you at on Kingsbury? Like, we've had callers that have called up and said, I kind of hope he gets a head coaching job.
Yeah, it'd be nice if he was to leave.
If he got a head coaching job, that'd be awesome because then you could run a NFL offense like what Seattle's doing with Darnold, you know, one of those Shanahan-type offenses under center. I'd like to have my cake and eat it too, where I'd like Kingsbury to be here for the continuity that comes with the same offense for 3 years with your quarterback that is massive for a young developing player. But I would also like to incorporate more of those other things. There's no reason he can't or shouldn't be willing to do that. And if he doesn't want to do it to the offseason, that's fine. But I remember the Ben Standing piece where this guy watches every single play of every single NFL game and every single Power 5 college football team in the offseason every year to try to find new creative things to do. Well, do that.
Yeah, he adjusts, but he's very slow to adjust. He does.
I don't know if he does. I mean, yes, as much as any coach does. But I would not say that that is a trait I would describe Cliff Kingsbury with, as saying, like, he is willing to, you know, he's malleable. I would say the opposite.
Well, it's fair, but I guess my point is, the reason everybody brought up correctly, by the way, the Cliff was he would do incredibly well as an offense for 8 games, 9 games, 10 games, whatever. Then defenses, presumably, would figure something out, and he wouldn't change. When we're screaming last year, when Jaden was busted up, they played good defenses, the offense wasn't the same, Terry's just trotting out to the left, there's no motion, there's no change, and there's no nothing. Eventually, he did it. My point is, it takes a lot. You got to get punched in the mouth a lot of times. You go, okay, fine, if I walk into the guy's right hand, he's going to punch me in the mouth. I'll do something different. He does it eventually, but he's not quick to change, I would say.
Lot going on, but I want to start with the big news. Five Car's back on the track.
He is back on the track, my friend. Again, I was right, and then I was wrong, and I think I was wrong again. Then I was kind of right. Whatever. Bottom line is no more Willie Woney. He will, as announced today by Dan Quinn at his press conference. I thought that was really, really cool. I mean, that's kind of the whole point, right, of ramping up. You actually ramp up towards something. He will play, and we will see it live in person in Minnesota.
Yeah, it adds some spice to our trip, and we're not alone. Thousands of Commanders fans, I'm sure, are going to Minneapolis because it's not a stadium that the Commanders play at very often. This is a place where they almost never play, and so it's going to be one of those destination trips for Commanders fans. It's also considered, for people that don't know, one of the nicest, best NFL stadiums. It's still kind of new. It was one of the initial stadiums from a technological standpoint that has the tech of while you're inside, you feel outside at times. So for a lot of reasons, I can't wait to get out there. But boy, does this spice things up for those of us that are going to be in person. And for everybody else watching on TV, this game just became must-see television again. It went from a fairly uninteresting Week 14 game where the results don't matter to now you've got to tune in, you've got to watch to see how Jaden Daniels looks, whether or not A, he's completely healthy, and B, can stay completely healthy, but also how does he deal with the blitz of Brian Flores and the Vikings? How does he deal with some of the things he had trouble with against the Seahawks when Kurt Warner and some national analysts were beating up on him a little bit the last time he was on the field? This just became really, really compelling again.
There's so many different aspects to that, but you said the most essential one to me. It's the thing that I care about. Just as a tangentially, I'll get to the smaller one first. I like it when players that I care about who are developing go up against a different style, right? The paradigm of the league is to back off, cover with seven, rush with four, make people dink and dunk all the way down the field, knowing that a penalty, an incomplete pass, a TFL, something will you know, interrupt the drive, right? Those are the drive killer type moments, and you're counting on a mistake when you have the offense run more and more and more plays. That's kind of the paradigm. Basically, it's the Pat Mahomesization, if that's even a term I made up, of the NFL, where they said, we're getting destroyed blitzing people. You come after these guys like Brady and Mahomes with their supercomputers in their brains, they'll pick you apart and kill you. So we're not doing that. We're just covering, no big plays, and that's how defense is. There are a couple guys that run counter to that. Todd Bowles is one. This was the first test that Jaden Daniels ever had in the NFL in a regular season game. And Brian Flores, he is here to blitz you. He's here to also blitz you and blitz me and you and he'll blitz a couple people in the crowd. That's what he wants to do, is bring pressure and see how you handle it and how you deal with it. I like that, just from a developmental perspective, that it's a little bit different. It's another look, another chance for growth.
Well, what I really like about having to deal with all the blitzing this week is this is actually an area of Daniels' game this year where he has struggled. If you remember last year, he was incredible against the blitz. Really dynamic and prolific. When you brought someone, he would just throw behind the oncoming defender and they would make plays. This year, the numbers against the blitz have kind of reversed. Marcus Mariota, I believe, is seventh against the blitz in the National Football League in terms of completion percentage and efficiency. Jaden Daniels was completing, before he last got hurt, 47% of his passes against the blitz this year, which was dead last among qualifying quarterbacks. And so what I really like about the matchup is, number one, I think you're going to see a reversal of some of those numbers. I'll bet you he handles it a lot better with more talent around him, which we'll get into in a second, because he's going to have his full assortment of weapons, basically. But beyond that, I think this is just a really good test. Like, this is where it's become clear to me, I view him coming back and playing differently than a lot of fans of this team, it seems like. We all want the same things. We all want Jaden Daniels to be on the field, staying healthy, playing spectacular football, the team winning important games, getting back to the playoffs, and winning a Super Bowl ultimately. But how you get there, you know, we can have differing views. And I think it's critical for him to get in-game reps. I think it's massive for him to be back on the field. And I need to see him basically get tested. You've got a golden opportunity. I think they screwed up in the preseason by not having him throw a single pass. I think they screwed up in training camp with how they went about their operation. And now you've got a de facto more valuable, more legitimate opportunity to kind of recreate some of those things, to develop him, to get him back up to speed, to make up for some of the areas where I think self-inflicted wounds set in for this offense, for this operation, for Jaden Daniels. And so now you've got five games. This has been my point all along. This is not 1 week. This is not week 18. 29% of your season is out in front of you. That's 29% theoretically of practices, of games, of time on the grass for this guy to go get better, to go make plays, to develop again so you're not stunting the progress that he can make the rest of the way. And to get to see him get tested against Flores and the Vikings is a huge deal, because if it goes great or it doesn't is irrelevant. That's the gift of this now lost season, is that he's going to be better for everything that happens as long as you can keep him healthy. And the juice is worth the squeeze here. I'm really excited for Sunday. And I'm happy for the fan base, because him being on the field, him not being on the field, is a binary difference between these games, frankly, being worth watching and not.
Yeah, it's my level of interest, yeah.
No slight against Marcus Mariota, who is a adequate backup and is a guy they should re-sign the second they're able to. Keep him around as your QB2, because it's pretty clear you're going to need a second car in the garage that you can use when the other one needs some work.
That's right.
But this is the Ferrari, and getting to get back out on the highway and open it up a little bit again is the whole point. That's why we spent the big money.
So, you and I have already argued about this. I'm sure we'll argue about it more. But I am way – that fader exists for me. Like, that data point that you're talking about, him playing well, him playing poorly, I'm interested in it. I will watch, of course, with great interest. And I care to some degree, but it's nowhere near. It's dwarfed 1,000 times over by the adjustments I need to see. In order to feel comfortable, in order to feel happy, to feel confident, I need lessons learned. I need a guy that's been hurt four times, significantly. Three of them caused him to miss games. I need major adjustments. I need paradigm shifts. I need it starts with him, with Jaden Daniels himself. I need those hits to go away. I need every shot that he's taking to be minimized. Part of the position is you're going to get hit. You deliver the ball from the pocket. See that Cincinnati Bengals game that you and I were at, where he hit Terry McLaurin in stride for the game-winning touchdown. That's part of the position. That's going to happen. The unnecessary, the avoidable must be avoided. I need an adjustment there. I need it now. I need to start right now this minute for these next handful of games. I need coaching staff to reflect that in terms of designs, what's called, what's emphasized, what's being coached. If it's, well, you can't you know, clip his wings or something like that, and you just sort of toss your hands up in the air to say you're helpless to influence it, that's not acceptable to me. I care about those things 1,000 times more than what happens in a lost season for a team that's playing out the string. It's still important. It's still, again, data points for growth and development, and as you said very well at the beginning of this your speech just now. Speech is not a speech. What did you give?
I was a speech.
Your soliloquy?
Yeah, I'm looking for votes.
Your prepared speech.
Yeah.
At the beginning of your prepared campaign speech is we all want the exact same thing, right? Healthy, thriving Jaden Daniels carrying this team to meaningful wins. That's what everybody's looking for. How to get there, I think, is a great conversation. But to me, the thing that I'm going to be watching like a hawk is, do I see a difference in, I need to be available. My lesson learned from this 3 separate significant injury season is that I'm lucky all of those weren't worse, and I need to do everything I possibly can to protect myself. That's what I'm watching.
So a couple of things. One, I have seen that people would suggest, well, he shouldn't run at all. He can play, that's fine, but he doesn't get to run. Uh-uh. That's not how this is going to go. He's going to run. That's what he does. This is why he is special. Can he also win from the pocket? Yes. This is not an either-or. He is capable of doing both. His ability to do both, the fact that he's a dual threat, the fact that he is a running quarterback, is why he went number 2 overall. It's also ingrained in him, in the same way that I have a proclivity and a propensity to want to eat chicken wings, or that Danny can't help himself from going and finding a pickleball court. When Jaden Daniels is playing football, he is going to use his legs. That is going to happen. So the idea shouldn't be he's got to stay in the pocket. Uh-uh. He should be Jaden Daniels. Play football. But to your point, you got to be smart. You've got to make decisions. I don't even want to say better, because I don't know that he's made bad decisions when he's gotten hurt. For the most part, I think the injuries have actually been somewhat coincidental to his play style, in a sense. It's not like Robert Griffin where he's getting crunched, turning it back upfield, or not getting out of bounds or something. So I don't have as big an issue with that. Like the conversation they're having about Jackson Dart in New York right now, where he's saying, just watch my tape from high school. This is who I've always been. I can do this, guys. Trust me. And he doesn't know that, oh, my God, you're not going to last another season if you keep doing this.
Where you were headbutting dudes from, like, you know, whatever – Teddy Roosevelt Central High School, when you were bigger and stronger than everybody, that's awesome. This is the show up here. This is the big leagues.
That's a real discussion they need to be having in New York, because mm-hmm. he quite literally seeks out contact. I don't think that's what Jaden Daniels has done, and I don't feel the same way about him that I do Dart or I did about Griffin. I think he is smarter and better. There's a Lamar element a lot of times of, you know, getting down, falling, sliding, whatever. But is it true that, yes, he got hurt while running against the Packers and got crunched? Absolutely. Did that happen against the Panthers? Yes, it did. Did that happen more recently against the Seahawks? Although that one to me was just super fluky. Yes. So are you more at risk when you weigh what he does, when your frame is his, and you're running around getting landed on by giant men moving at a high rate of speed? You are. So that's something he's got to be mindful of, no doubt. But where I will be okay with a philosophical shift moving forward for the rest of this season, not into next year, where games matter again. But if they want to turn down their interest as a coaching staff in designed runs, I would like that. I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, there's no reason now in games where whether you win or lose doesn't really benefit you that much, getting him going downhill, you know, asking him to be physical between the tackles on any of that. And they've taken a lot of that out of the playbook, it feels like, anyway. But I think a lot of the reason we don't see a lot of those now is just because he hasn't played most of the year. But I would just advocate for less designed runs. If you can get him to the edge in space near the sideline where he can get out of bounds, I'm cool with those. But anything kind of between the hash marks where he's going to have to either get down or get tackled probably based on where people are in space, no thanks. And that is one of the things. There could be a bunch of them that they do differently now in these final five, Jim Loke style, where they're trying to get to the finish line, keep as many guys healthy as possible, but where there is valuable activity going on.
Yeah, I mean, think of the – I'm not saying you don't want to go full Russell Wilson. You never want to do that, But think of the number of times you saw Russell Wilson know a play is dead. Whoever's fault that is, we could have a great discussion. But you get to the sideline and you just kind of flip it away to avoid the hit. I need those. I don't know that Daniels always does that. I think he's always still got in his mind, I can make a play here. And sometimes he's right. Other times it results in that, you know, a hit that, you know, previously wasn't catastrophic, but this year, three different times, it has been. Again, one of those had nothing to do with him scrambling, nothing to do with him being out of the pocket. That Dallas hit was a fluky, terrible thing. That's the position. That's part of it. That's always going to happen. You referenced his frame. It's one of those things that's not quite to the level of adult content and, you know, Sandra Day O'Connor saying, I'll know it when I see it, but it's close to that. I remember, again, it was, I guess it was Robert Mays, who we had on yesterday, we had on a while ago. They're in the shotgun to emphasize the quarterback run game. Stop emphasizing the quarterback run game. Get out. If that's the reason you're in shotgun, not good enough for me. If the reason you're in shotgun is we like Daniels or any quarterback to be able to see the field, never have to take his eyes off the defense, see as the coverage develops, if that's the case, okay, an argument can be made there. It's not necessarily one I buy, but it's that's one I'll say, okay, at least that's thoughtful. We got to keep the element of his running. No, you don't.
Sure you do. Sure you do.
No, you don't.
What do you mean get rid of the quarterback run game?
I'm not talking about getting rid of it. I'm talking about emphasizing it. When you emphasize a certain thing, then it becomes ingrained. Like, the point is, if I'm emphasizing him as a passer, as an escape artist, as a playmaker, I want that emphasized turned up versus quarterback run is a huge part of our DNA.
So maybe it's a semantics thing because I don't know what emphasize is versus not emphasize.
If the reason you're in the shotgun is because you're emphasizing the quarterback run game, that's wrong. That's a broken paradigm.
That's what one analyst said. I think they're in the shotgun because that's what he's always done, and that's what Cliff's always done. I don't think they're going, we'd like to get under center, but we're going to stay in the shotgun so Jaden can run more.
If
Lamar Jackson's under center plenty. They still have an offense predicated on him running.
I don't know the answer. I don't know why it is. That's a smart analyst who said that one thing, and that's why I keep saying, if that's the reason, and I don't know what
sure.
it is, if that's the reason, then let's have a conversation where I shake my finger and say no. If the reason they're in shotgun is other stuff, okay, I'm going to have that
sure.
conversation. But I think that's important. I want paradigm shifts where everybody's priority is him being healthy, and including his, by the way. The biggest responsibility here in this pie graph is Jaden Daniels himself.
Well, I think their priority is always him being healthy. I don't think Cliff Kingsbury hasn't had that as a priority or Dan Quinn hasn't had that as a priority at any point. That would be insane. I mean, he is the keys to the kingdom. He's the face of the whole franchise. As we've seen this year, when he's not on the field, you don't really have a chance to win. So I don't think there has to be any kind of philosophical shift on that. I think they've always wanted to keep him healthy.
Well, when you run quarterback power early on in the season, that tells me that's not a paradigm. That tells me it's, we can get these yards right here. I don't care about those yards. I care about Jaden Daniels.
So you would
health.
Never do that, ever?
I wouldn't do it as often as they did.
Right. I mean, they did it a handful of times over the course of
which was enough.
A football season.
And once people sniffed out his keepers for whatever reason, whether it's
right.
his fault, someone else's fault, I'd go, maybe that's not something we need to run as often. But they certainly did it.
So that I'll disagree with. This guy ran for 1,134 yards at LSU when he won the Heisman. That's why he won the Heisman, and it's why he was the number two pick. He ran for 885 yards the year before that at LSU, and it's why he became a household name in college football and was one of the top 10 picks going into the season where he climbed the list. The beauty of Jaden Daniels is he can also throw, which is why if you divide the number of plays he's doing something by passing versus running, it's still 70-30 or whatever it is. And the majority of his runs, by the way, are scrambles. They are not designed runs. Most of his yards, like last year, he was number one in the NFL in rushing yards on scrambles with 600 or something like that. Whereas Lamar, most of it's on designed runs. So would I not, as I said earlier, like would I not have him running between the tackles in these meaningless games now? I wouldn't. Would I rip that out of the playbook altogether? Do I think that's an issue generally? No, because I think they're tapping into what he does great. It would be like saying, I don't want Terry McLaurin getting injured on the sideline anymore like he did in that Chiefs game. So let's not have him trying to get the ball in small windows in contested areas on the sideline, which is literally the thing he does best. But the fact that he comes back now, Danny, gives you a reason to watch again. And I have been fascinated by this idea of the number of fans who didn't want to see him back for fear of injury. They're out there, by the way, in a big, 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 big way. So I did a poll today on my Twitter account, at Grant H. Paulson, and I just asked, of Commanders fans, if Jaden Daniels is healthy, this was before DQ said he's going to play. I said, if he's healthy, he should play or he should sit. What would you have guessed? I'm going to give you the results of my poll in a second. But what would you have guessed the results would have been? Because we got so many calls, loud group of the fan base saying, don't play this guy, that I thought it was close to 50-50. Maybe that's crazy. I thought maybe 40.
No, because they were passionate about it. They were loud.
I thought like 40 to 50% of the fan base didn't want to see this guy play if he's healthy. Just to save him for the offseason, to redshirt him the rest of the way.
I would have guessed 70-30. So 70 he should play, 30 no?
Surprisingly, the poll ended up with over 1,200 votes so far. 87% of people said he should play.
How about that?
About 13% said he should sit. So my question to you is, are we just hearing from a very loud, small minority of the fan base that screams about not wanting to see him for injury risk? Or is this poll not indicative of the actual numbers? Because I would guess, just based anecdotally on the phones.
Yeah, the percentage of called us of among the 13%, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Is very high.
The people that we have heard from, it's close to half and half might be hyperbolic. Mm-hmm. But it's not that far off, I don't think. We've heard constantly from fans saying this. So do you think 87-13 is about the ratio? Or are you're saying closer to 70-30?
I think it's probably closer to 75-25, something like that. But even still, there is a pulse. And I understand how they get there. I know a lot of people don't. It's not what I subscribe to, by the way. But to me, it's every time he plays, he's been hurt. He sat out for a while, came back, got hurt against Seattle. This something about this is broken, whatever this is. You know what I mean? Like the when he plays, he gets hurt. So why would you play him if he's going to get hurt? That's the logical chain. To me, the juice is worth the squeeze. If he was, closer to Joe Burrow's status in the NFL, where a guy that's played, has been an MVP candidate, has been to a Super Bowl, and is a finished product, I could hear more of that case. But he's not. I think that's the big disconnect there, is that it's important to me that he gets some of the development. I'm going to be sitting there holding my breath.
Of course. It's
not quite to the level of Alex Smith, where I'll get queasy, where I'll be a disgusting taste in my mouth when I see him play because I'm so scared he's going to get injured again. It's not that level, but it's closer to that than zero.
Well, he also gets hit more than any other quarterback. That's the stat. Now, I don't know what the numbers look like total at this point because he's missed a lot of games over the last several weeks. But I believe it was going into the Seattle game, and if not, it was the week before that. It wasn't that close. He had been hit more than any other quarterback in the NFL since he came into the league. And the combination of those hits, that quantity, with his minuscule frame is a problem. Now, a lot of the hits are because he runs so much and he gets tackled. And they're not scary. They're not bad hits. That just means, though, you took on contact on those plays. But guess what? Plenty of those hits are in the pocket. The one you talked about, that Bengals game last year where he delivers a dime.
And that's the position.
And like, that is part of the position.
Yeah, the Dallas hit that he got hurt on, that's a – you know, a guy comes free. He's in an awkward spot. He went down awkwardly, hurt himself. That happens. That's going to happen next year, too, probably.
But if the ball's coming out faster, if he's more decisive, Mariota-like in the sense, even though, everything Jaden Daniels does is typically at a higher rate, other than maybe run and read option or a couple things, right? But my point is, Mariota's so decisive pre-snap, and the ball comes out so quick in quick game, he's going to get hit naturally a lot less. You're not going to see those 40, 50% pressure rate games if someone's holding the ball to try to make plays. So that's going to have to be a part of this too. And if I'm Cliff, that's one thing I'm saying. Hey, help our guys a little bit here and help yourself. You're going to take the hits because of the play style. Let's take fewer of them in the pocket. Don't you think that would be a worthwhile conversation?
And that's part of my point about the paradigm. I want those things emphasized. If we're going deep, let's max protect it. Let's add an extra lineman or keep someone in the block to chip. And maybe, that route might be dead because there's fewer receivers there to deceive the defense. Whatever it is, I want we can't afford to have his growth stunted because it's not just the games that he's missing. Again, it's weeks of real meaningful practice. I know they don't meaningfully practice. It's vet days for everybody every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or Tuesdays if it's a short week, or Mondays.
Did you see Noah Brown was out with a rest day today?
Yeah, but it was planned.
A planned rest day.
Oh, my God. But even still, shtick aside, him being on the football field, both for practice and games, is incredibly valuable. This is we're still building this thing into superstardom. I know his rookie year was incredible. It's one of the best ones we've ever seen it at the position or really at any position in the sport. This is not a finished product yet. I believe in him. I'm a huge fan still. But this year reminded everybody that it ain't that easy.
There's work to do.
Nobody just rolls over and dies. defenses are too good. Coordinators are too smart. Too many adjustments got made. Too many injuries can happen. Too many personnel swings and misses can occur, which is exactly what happened here. The perfect storm of no all happened to this team. I need him to be healthy and available, both for the improvement and to get that those data points of experience.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend and even hire employees. My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of the Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We import snacks from all over the world. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.